Attention, citizens! It's time for Super Pulp Science!
Hello and welcome to Super Pulp Science, a podcast all about how genre gets made. I am GMB Kamichek, a working writer and illustrator. My co-host is none other than the world-renowned Justin Curry, known in many circles as Chasing Artwork, but known around this studio and the boxing ring as Lefty. Is that true?
No. I do like my left hook.
But. Yeah, I've heard. I won't tell you how I heard it, but I heard in the elevator conversation.
I'm not long-suffering today?
You haven't been suffering lately because you've been absent mostly. You've been so busy. I assume
That's
you're...
True. I missed the last two. The last one was angry. You guys...
Yeah, we got angry.
It was great.
Yeah, we got angry.
I got to listen to it early because I get the raw audio file in the email chain. And so on the way back from my ski trip, we listened to you, Lyndon,
That's right.
and Jonathan Ball.
Because it started getting so off topic in a way I didn't like. And I...
No, it was great. It was...
It's the first time, actually... in a long time where I almost emailed you, Dan, to say, let's scrap that episode and we'll have that conversation again
really?
In better spirits. And then I thought, no, this is what I don't like about how people use social media. Only when it's exactly a certain way.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
it's disingenuous if you're always trying to hit the same note. And so then I just said, nope, if that was actually the conversation we had, that's the one we should keep. So That's the behind the scenes of that.
Interesting.
So dear listener, if you have been our long-suffering listener, then you know what I'm talking about.
You don't do that very much, though, I would say. Email me and say, let's not air that.
I think that's only happened maybe three times in how many years?
So. Yeah, yeah.
Right? And the other two times that it happened was because the person reached out to me and said, I think
we're not supposed to talk about that. Or
yeah,
that
or like I just struck the wrong tone and we have to honor the guest.
Yeah, no, that's
request,
fair.
Right?
That's fair.
So we do that.
Yep.
But every now and then a guest will come on the show, say something pretty raw, think about it for a few days, and then say, actually, no, just leave it. So I like those. Mm. I like that the best. Mm. So that's I tried real. To honor that in our own conversation. So, but you haven't, dear listener, heard the unedited version. So today is a special day for us at the studio because this is the first day since Schrodinger's convention went from maybe, maybe not to being actually. I opened the box on Schrodinger's convention, which was a longstanding question mark about whether or not the behind the scenes of the Calgary Comic Con would get sorted out so that my spot would be intact. And I won't belabor the dear listener with the ins and outs or my gripes about it. But I will just say this. When a company gets so big that there are two different groups of people who are in charge of different things, they often don't talk to each other. And that can create a lot of problems. So
and we've seen that in the past with other, a comic convention will start usually with just one show. And as they grow and get bigger, they take on maybe two or three shows. So now it's, Reed Pop in the States, for example.
Yes.
Or even infamously, Wizard World in the States, right? They started with a couple conventions, and then as they started to kind of figure things out, they spread themselves across the, Canada and United States, and Wizard Worlds were, in every city. And what we started to see was kind of a breakdown in their bookkeeping and organizational and just customer service.
When your business stops being whatever you said your business was and starts being growth,
yeah,
then you have a breakdown on that essential service. You're more interested in adding a new show to your roster than you are in maintaining the quality of service of
or even improving it, right?
Yeah, or improving it. Yeah. So I think it's part of that growing pain, and it seems to have been sorted out. So
what was the latest thing that kind of sorted out? You thought you had grandfathered in, turned out not to be the case.
Well, it's really comes down to the fact that I paid for a spot, arrived one time, it wasn't there. They had given it to someone else. They said, "Well,
it got lost in the shuffle."
Yeah, lost in the shuffle.
Hundreds
and then,
of artists, hundreds of tables.
Then we found out that a number of people had booked spots, showed up. And they had been double sold.
There was a big kerfuffle.
Yeah, big kerfuffle. So it was two groups of people taking money for the same spots. It caused it happens, but it's not, you know, it's not cool. And the show, the people of the show, who will remain nameless because I don't know if they bent the rules on anyone's behalf or whatever, but they came through and said, okay, well, we got you a spot. Sorry for the mix-up. But then the one group, they refunded me, gave me the difference for the table that I got.
Because you thought you were getting three tables?
Yeah, like a big exhibitor room.
And they didn't have your three tables, but they gave you one table as, oh my God, we're sorry.
Yeah, so sorry. We'll do the best we can. Yeah. This is the space we have available. Will you take it? Yes, I'll take it. Work out the money. Done. And then that invoice, I guess, somehow got now switched to open instead of closed.
For the three tables or for the one?
Yeah, for the three.
Oh.
And so it floated all the way to their collections to say, like, you did Calgary Comic Con.
With three tables.
With three tables. And you didn't pay for it. And I said, well, I'm not paying for it because I never got it. And they said, well, you can't not pay your bills. And it became this whole long fight. That's, by the way, I tried to avoid this conversation at the beginning of the podcast by saying I probably won't talk about it, but I'll answer any question I'm asked directly. It just became a fight with a team of accountants that are not interested in anything but what's written down in front of them.
Exactly. They're not interested in the circumstance around it. They just want to, they just want you to pay them so they can.
I had no choice but then to point them at their own people and say, like, I'm not dealing with this. These are the people that have to deal with this. And I didn't like taking what was a favor done to me and turning it into a weapon against the people that helped me.
Right.
And so that was kind of shitty. But it seems to have all worked out. So my name is on the list.
The last couple of weeks, like, Lyndon in the studio here and myself have been getting these, like, exhibitor emails. Like, hey, exhibitor, now the show's coming up. Here's your table number. Here's the load-in information. Here's this. Here's that. But Gregory wasn't getting those emails.
Yeah, I wasn't getting that. But I also didn't get you also would get, if you were... what's the word? You didn't get in, you'd get your rejection email.
Right.
I didn't get a rejection and I didn't get an acceptance. And it was just Schrodinger's convention. Like, it either is or isn't. And I don't know till I get there. And so we're planning to ship pallets. We booked our hotels. We made our travel arrangements, all these things. All the while with me not knowing.
There is skin in this game. Yeah. It's not if I don't get it, that sucks. Like, it's a huge potential loss of income.
Yeah.
This is Canada's second biggest show, I think.
And one that I've been doing so long that I have a lot of...
Since, like, 2009.
We've talked about that 80-20. You know, there's a lot of people that have shown up and supported, and they provide a huge amount of the income by just showing up to buy it directly. And so if I'm not there, it matters. Yeah, it matters.
Absolutely.
But as of yesterday, I am listed as an exhibitor.
So you are on the website.
I'm on the map.
You're on the website.
Yeah. So as far as I know... It's good. And this segues nicely into something that Justin made recently. Listen to this. You hear that, dear listener? There's a little Foley for you. Justin has codified convention preparation.
I don't want to get in trouble here. My girlfriend Darcy made this.
Darcy?
I had a rough version of this, and then she took it and made it into what it is today.
Because this is really nice. This is like pro now.
Yeah, I had a note on my phone, like a reminder note, so I could go through.
And you would text that note to me every now and then. Yeah, and we would go through the checklist ourselves. And then it showed up as this gorgeous piece of paper with little boxes and color-coded.
And it's put into sections. This is the convention checklist. This is everything that I need to have checked off to properly do a convention. And this comes from over 10 years of doing conventions professionally. This is what needs to go into a successful convention setup.
But it took... someone better at organizing than you to codify it into a proper, right? So shout out to Darcy.
I began 5 years ago in secret, working all night, every night, right into the dawn. 1,000 experiments, 1,000 failures. And then, at last, the great wonderful day.
This really came in clutch when I started doing more than one show a weekend. Every once in a while, just the way the timing lines up, I'll have two different shows in two different cities and I'll have to send a team to one and I'll do one. And then as soon as I get back, I have another show. So I have to kind of prep for that third show as well and trying to keep that all sorted in your head.
The mental load is just too much. Yeah.
So having this checklist has been absolutely crucial to my success.
And we don't have to get into the granule parts of it, but I think we could talk about it in general. Right now, your general headings in this list are stock, setup, electronics, table, and other.
And don't forget important.
And then there's a section, yeah, you didn't want to bury the lead. There's a section here for important. And important in particular, these have, there's four things on there: your passport, your hotel, your convention info, and your flight info. Those are important things. If you're going to another city, you need to have all that sorted out. But everybody who is involved in any industry where a trade show is part of how they function. So, dear listener, in a trade show environment, and I've been to Comdex and I've been to other trade shows, it really is about the industry coming together and showing and proving what they can do. And comic conventions have slid out of that. That used to be what they were like. Now comic conventions are a whole other animal that are as much about earning potential on the day as anything else.
Right.
It used to be that convention setups for companies, and it still is for most industries, the convention is an expense. It just goes on the books.
Advertising,
lining up leads, and it's going to cost you a whole bunch of money, and you don't know what the result is going
to
be.
You don't have anything for sale at your booth. You're just showcasing what you can do, hoping to get those clients after the trade show. But it's a loss. It's an advertising cost.
Yeah, and Comic-Cons are different. What has happened to the Comic-Con is that the exhibitor and artist alley sections have become an enormous component of how a show draws people. It's like a gigantic pop culture shopping mall that is available only for a few days, and because it'll have everything from your hard-to-find collectibles to your handmade items. And so there's a little something for every kind of person who's looking to connect with their fandom, as well then the show, in order to hit the mainstream, the shows get featured guests from television, movies, video games to come and be present also. So the average media will pick up that, you know, some famous movie star is going to be there. And so now they're talking about the show, and that is how the show then casts their umbrella to an even wider audience. But for many of the little constituent parts, it's a big financial win to table at the show, have direct access to your demographic, and just sell to them with no distributor, no cartage, no publisher in the middle. And so that's why the fuss and bother. And for us in particular at the studio, we do Calgary Comic Con and then Saskatoon Expo the weekend after, and we turn it into a 10-day work vacation where we, you know, just be workaholics on the road working on writing and illustration when we're not tabling at the show. And it's just an iron sharpens iron environment where we all kind of encourage each other
to do stuff. Because the other option there would be to do the 13-hour car ride to Calgary, do the Calgary convention, drive 13 hours home, and then the next weekend, Saskatoon would be like another 8-hour car ride and 8-hour car ride. It'd be too much on the road.
You're doubling back on yourself, exactly.
Yeah.
And like I always kind of look forward to that like stretch in between the two shows, because we always dedicate it to like we take a couple days off, we play video games with friends, we come up with brand new projects. We relax.
We find excuses to laugh. This is how I was putting it to somebody recently. They're like, well, it's a work vacation. How's that work? I said, well, it's a little bit like a support group. We work 18-hour days, and then in the middle, we find a bunch of excuses to laugh at stuff while we're also pushing a bunch of stuff up into the pipeline. You know, like we do some goofy things, and we, like last time, we made up a imaginary YouTube channel.
Oh yeah, B&B Bros.
Right, B&B Bros. And then we would, you know, we'd act out these little skits while we're cooking or while we're doing stuff. There's no camera. P.S. Right, we're just
there. Will be this
right?
time.
No, there isn't. We're tune just in. You know, you're just finding excuses to laugh and hang out, and the stakes
I've
are.
I've been
high.
Pitching this as a series, you guys. Don't you know?
Well, if you get it, right, you should recast me.
So, to get to this checklist, something I was kind of thinking about this as I was thinking of the subject of like we should talk about, because we're leading up to one of our biggest shows of the year, the prep for it. The first thing that you need to figure out is, do I have a table at the show?
Schrodinger's convention.
Right. If you're brand new, if you're thinking about a convention, when typically, Gregory, do you start looking at vendor tables at the show?
So this is interesting because I've been looking at trying a new market right now, which is, I think, a good amount of my work would connect with the tattoo world mm-hmm. pretty nicely. So it's disingenuous for me to talk about how I do Comic-Cons because I mostly now do the same shows that I've been doing for a while, and I've whittled away the ones that aren't good for me. But the tattoo convention world is new. So I've been looking at when they are, where they are, how they are. And there's a horror convention in LA that I've been looking at, a horror convention in Minneapolis. There's a horror convention that's in New York City. This is also an area where I think, you know, because we have a horror movie coming down the pipe, we need to go into that.
So before you apply, do your research on the shows.
That's right.
So you're looking at things like time of year, attendance.
Yeah, so this is it, exactly. Yeah, so this is feels more new. It feels like I'm actually researching things again instead of like, oh, I'll just call the show organizer and book my spot.
Right.
I look at what am I already doing? So I have my schedule of events. Where do I need to have those breaks for family that are sort of part of our regular family
like
life?
Early September.
Right.
Can't do anything.
Not
right?
a good time. Yeah,
busy with school, stuff like that.
Busy with school, trying to be there, trying to be a good dad, all that stuff. So block that stuff out first.
Right.
Then look for where I think, because it's a new show, I can't make any assumptions about earning. That's how I look at
right.
it. There's no money to be made. That's how I think about it. So if I'm going to pay to fly there, pay to get all my stuff there, who can I arrange a meeting with who is there in that trade show capacity? Go back to thinking about it as
like
a loss leader, like a normal trade show. Who can I meet? Who can I have a meeting with? Who can I have dinner with? Who can I show and prove to while I'm there that'll make it worthwhile in the long run if there's no short-term gain to be had? That's what I'm looking at right now. And once I make that list, I then also now, because we're agented, we can look at the featured guests, and I can ask my agent, can you reach out to this person's agent and see if you can arrange a meeting with this person that's in a high, somewhat higher echelon? I don't have to leave it to chance. I can actually put it on the books.
Hmm.
So that's part of what I'm doing for shows now. When I was first starting out, I just did everything local.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up. When you're starting out, usually it's, okay, in the drivable area, what options are?
What can I fit in my car? Yeah. And how long am I willing to drive? And you're just like, you know, you're like Loman without the tragic end, I suppose. You're just going from house to house, right?
Yeah.
And you're hoping that someone will care what you've got.
Yeah, less options in Canada. If you're in the States and you want to drive to conventions, driving distance, you're a lot more options available to you. And especially if you're not just looking at comic conventions, but anime conventions and gaming conventions, these all have artist alleys that might be up your alley. Or book, there's book conventions and then horror conventions, sci-fi, like there's...
Cities are more closely, they're all kind of more densely
population's
packed,
much denser.
Especially in the east, so it's easier to get back and forth.
They've asked for it, the country bumpkins. This will give them a bit of a shock, something to write home about.
For me, it's usually like December, January is kind of my planning stage when I kind of look at my whole year. I have the conventions that I've grandfathered in the year before, and that's when I started doing my research of what do I want to add to the list and what kind of time commitment, attendance, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
I'm usually doing that in January. A lot of conventions will have their applications open all year round. Some will have a date that they'll state, like, you know, February 18th at 12 o'clock, applications are open. Typically, those are, like, more in high demand. Like, anime conventions, artist alleys are tough to get into.
Yeah,
so they,
it's like part of the culture of anime shows, too, is everyone scrambles for a seven-minute window to book their shows, and it's first come, first serve, no grandfathering in, and... People, you know, it's stressful.
Well, it creates a demand, right?
It does,
and
it
gets
really
people excited. So that's if you're going to sell your spots, that's one way to do it.
And do you think, like, the, typically the artist alley at anime conventions, it's usually younger artists.
Mm-hmm.
And they, it just seems to be more younger artists at anime conventions, more people who are starting out. At Comic-Cons, it's more so established.
Grizzled veterans.
Grizzled veterans, yeah. If I can't find, so if there's a show I'm really looking forward to in July and I can't find anything about when applications go up, I'll look at what they did last year and I'll put a note in my calendar, like sometime in June, applications open up. So here's when you need to be, you know, nose to the ground, keeping an eye on this. You can also email. So for example, this year, Halifax didn't have any notifications of when their applications were going up. So I just emailed the organizers, hey, I'm interested in signing up. When will I be able to apply? And they replied back, here's when you need to keep an eye out for it. Blah, blah, blah.
And don't underestimate, dear listener, the power of actually having the phone ring.
Right.
Like you can, a lot of the convention staff in their emails will have their phone number there.
How did you get into the New York Comic Con for the first time?
Phoning the
and
person.
When did you phone? So I think we should bring this up next. You didn't apply to New York Comic Con like a normal person.
No, not like a normal
you
person.
You called somebody.
Like some weirdo.
Fairly close to the event.
Come
before
on.
The New York Comic Con, I called the one of the organizers who answered the phone because no one ever calls, right? So,
talk to me, please. Right? I'm desperate for conversation.
And they said, you know, we hold a certain number of spots open if you have something that's different than what we have.
And if you can use a phone.
Yeah. And if you can use a phone. And they simply asked me, like, do you have a website? Yeah. Can you send me some of the work that you've got? Yeah. And we did it all in that conversation. They opened it up. They looked at it and said, oh, yeah, this is perfect. This is not a thing we see. I don't have a whole bunch of this on the show floor already. It's so good that you called. Yes, if you'll take this spot in small press, it's yours. You know, and when we told people, when we were at New York Comic Con, we told them how I'd got in, some people were furious with that.
Why?
Right? Because they have waited and stressed for months about it.
So all they do is pick up a phone.
Pick up the phone and phone. Because I was also perfectly willing to be told no.
Yeah, I mean, right? You got nothing to lose.
Yeah, that's the side. If you've got all your eggs in the basket, then you're in trouble, but...
Yeah, most busy conventions will have a waiting list of some kind, right? Like they filled up everything, there's a waiting list, but people always drop out. I don't think there's a single show we go to that we arrive and the first day there's not an empty table somewhere. Something happens, somebody can't make it, emergencies. So if there's a show that's on your radar, you didn't think you could go, then suddenly you can go, email or call the organizers. There's a good chance a table has opened up somewhere. This is how I got into the San Diego Comic-Con after 6-7 years of applying. Every year I would apply the second the show ended. Applications would go up. As soon as the show ends, I'd apply. Nope, nope, nope. And then in 2017...
Not just nope, but ha-ha, nope.
Yeah, we put you on a waiting list. 2017, I was just on a whim. You know, it's a couple weeks before the show. Hey... any chance anything is opened up, I'd really love to do the show. You let me know. And I had emailed on the heels of a big booth canceling. And so the guy called me and said, hey, it's 6 weeks before the San Diego Comic-Con, but can you fill this space?
Yeah,
out?
Can you solve my problem for
right.
me? Right. Then I don't have to tell my boss that I lost this spot. I'll tell them that I switched it with someone else. You know, everyone is just trying to cover their ends, frankly, as the show scrambles to come out. Now, when we were planning this also, this was my plan C, was even if I've heard nothing until we get there, since we're doing the Saskatoon show anyway, and since I have a bunch of work I can do, and I have some other sort of incomparables that I can do while I'm there, I'm going to come anyway, and I'm going to bring everything that I need for the Calgary show. We're shipping by pallet this year, so
which made it a little more scary, you not knowing.
Yeah, it made it scary, but it didn't make it impossible because the second show is going to cover that week's expenses no matter what. So there's no loss. It was just a question of, you know, how far in the black you want to be. And so I was in a very fortunate position in that way to say, I'm going to risk it. I'm going to bring everything. I'm going to show up on the Thursday and I'm going to say, who canceled? I'll take it. I'll move in an hour.
We have stories of that happening as well. Friends showing up the first
Lots.
Day of the show,
yeah.
never contacted the organizers, never said a word, just showed up during setup saying, hey, I've got my stuff. Where can I set up? Is there an empty table?
And it's just about solving people's problems, right? Nobody on the show floor on the day who is organizing that when someone doesn't show up and they've sent a few emails and they've called them and they're still not there. You're fixing a problem for them. They get to sell it twice.
Yeah.
Right? In some cases, three times. Right? So it works that way. And we've seen other people. Was that EC?
C2E2.
Where someone just saw a booth that was empty that was better than the booth that they had and just went to the organizer and said, do you mind if I pay the difference and take over that bigger spot? And they said, yeah, sure, no difference to us.
Lots of, I don't have that in me. Once I've set up, the idea of taking down and setting up again is like the worst idea in the world to me. But I know you've done that, Gregory.
Yeah, I've done that plenty of times. Yeah.
And we have friends who have done that. Like the first day, they're just in a slow traffic area. They notice there's a prime booth that doesn't seem to have anybody setting up. So, hey, organizers, can I fill this big empty spot? That's kind of an eyesore, right? If it's in a high traffic area, empty booth, doesn't look good for anybody. So.
Yeah, you just present it as you're going to help them solve a problem.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And be willing to hear no. You know, if you, that people sense if you're hoping to get your way no matter what, I think.
Yeah.
And they immediately want to say no to you, right? But if they see you arrive as a person that has an idea and is willing to hear no, I think you're more likely to get a yes as far as the basic human condition goes.
So early in my convention career, there was a situation where I went to a local Comic-Con and they didn't have anything, any paperwork on me having a booth. But luckily, I had taken photos on my phone of the receipt for me paying for my tables, and I was able to get the two tables that I paid for. But when I got there, they were like, out of luck, we don't have anything about you, get out of here. And I'm like, no, look. So when I'm signing up for a convention, what I do is I have a bunch of folders, and one folder will be called the Calgary Comic-Con. And in that folder will be another folder for table confirmations, another table for hotel confirmations, another folder for flights and stuff. And so if I go to a show and, oh my God, I can't find the email with the hotel reservation. I have a bunch of pictures of screenshots of all that information. Same with tables. I have all that. That's come in handy like at least 4 or 5 times.
So many times. Yeah. So many times.
Like, we don't have anything about you on the books. Either the hotel has said that or the convention has said that, and I've been able to pop it up immediately, like, here's my proof.
And dear listener, Justin also isn't the guy to flip the table and make a big scene. He will pleasantly say, oh, that's interesting. You know, I'm so sorry that you don't have that information. Can I provide it to you? I have copies of it. Like, can I show you why I'm here and what has brought me here, you know? And because he's not telling everyone that they did their jobs wrong, they're also more open to hear and help.
I feel like most organizers, nine times out of 10, are dealing with an angry, irate vendor or artist. So it seems to go a long way when you're pleasant and want to help solve the problem rather than...
Now, that's not to say you're not entitled to being angry.
Oh, it happens.
Right? Yeah, you're entitled to that anger. I'm not saying, dear listener, that like just put a cork in it and shut up. I'm just saying that there is a person who can help you, right, who is different than the person who made the mistake. And you have to try to separate those two.
All right, you fools. You've brought it on yourselves. Everything would have come right if you'd only left me alone. You've driven me near madness with your peering through the keyholes and gaping through the curtains. And now you'll suffer for it.
The other thing to keep in mind, like, you know, we've been encountering this. The shows that we've done for years, we've become like a pleasant interaction with the organizers, right? Like, oh, we know these guys. They're always happy. They're always pleasant to deal with. And we've started to reap some of the rewards for that. Like, there's like 3 shows this year that we didn't have to apply for. The organizers just sent us our table invoices.
Yeah, sent the invoice to us directly.
Because they're just, they like dealing with us. We like dealing with them. And so we're just kind of like linked into the show now.
Yeah, and we've had years of that interaction and verbal confirmation that like we're coming next year.
Yeah.
And so they don't ask us to apply. They just send us the invoice. And then if there's a problem there, like, oh, I can't make it, then we reach out and say, oh, you know, I have a conflict or whatever. But it's just, it's easier for them. Is that we're solving a problem in some regards by just being reliable income for that show also.
Right, because like the idea of making a big fuss and saying I'm never coming back to this show again, like that's a big paycheck that you're missing.
I have a different problem for you to solve then.
Shoot.
What if you keep applying for shows and you're not getting in? What if you keep trying to sign up and you're not getting in? What if you're ready to show improve and there's just no room for you? What would you say to that person that is just trying their best and they're doing everything right and they're following your checklist, but they just can't break in?
Normally when that happens, I switch up where I'm applying to. Like that happened New York. I got into the Artist Alley, and it's a very juried Artist Alley, and they're looking for kind of specific things. And at a certain point, I wasn't what they were looking for, so I wasn't able to get in. And then so I switched up and started going...
A bit amateurish, they might have said.
They really like their classic DC and Marvel house style, and I am definitely not that.
Yeah.
But and who knows? Maybe they had other people like me. There is nobody like me. But anyways, I went for small press instead, right? And so I had I had started doing graphic novels at the time, and so where it was hard to get into Artist Alley, I couldn't get in. Small press was the perfect home for me.
Yeah.
Anime North, incredibly hard to get into that Artist Alley, but they also have a section for only original work. 10 years, I got into that Artist Alley once. I applied for the original art section. I was able to get in there. So maybe you're just not right for that particular section of the show, or whoever's in charge doesn't think you're right for that part of the show. But there's every show has more than one section. There's vendors, there's Artist Alley, there's Pro Plazas, there's Maker's Mark. There's
another piece here too, which I think some people, this is what I was going to say. I feel like people sometimes don't realize how far they've come in their career, that they could request guest status at a show.
Right.
And how a guest status will work is either the table or your flight, or the table and the flight is paid for.
Access to that green
sometimes,
room.
Sometimes tables, flights, and hotels are all paid for by the show. And it's to bring a guest that they see as a draw for a particular demographic that they haven't drawn on before. So, dear listener, it's not that you have to be as famous as Todd McFarlane to get invited as a guest to a comic show. You just have to make some work that Todd isn't making.
Yeah.
And that adds another layer of a demographic that they hope will be a draw.
Sometimes if they're bringing you as a guest, depending on the show, you might get a good amount of space, but usually they're giving you one table. So there's the catch there. Like you don't have a lot of expenses, but you're also in a section of the show where making a big setup is not the done thing.
That's right. So you get to play important, but you might not have, it might be not, you want to treat it like a trade show now, like old school trade show. If you're being invited as a guest, then figure out how to meet other guests, figure out how to meet their publishers, figure out all that stuff, because you're not going to be selling
a lot. I remember the 1 year you were invited to Toronto as a guest.
Oh my goodness.
And the guest alley, nobody has anything other than one of those collapsible banner stands. And then there's Gregory just peacocking in the middle of it with his 12-foot banner stand and tough coming up out of the tables.
So I've been invited. I've been a guest of shows a number of times early in my career, and I stopped saying yes to it because I started causing trouble there, because what I want to do with the space is what I do when I'm in Artist Alley. Make a big show so that people can come and see what's up. But that is not the done thing in the guest line, so... No. Even though I would get invited a number of times to Calgary as a guest after that time in Toronto, I was like, you know what, maybe just better to pay my way completely, and then nobody's looking down their nose at how you're doing things. So, dear listener, you can take this advice or you can leave this advice, but there are lots of ways in, and you're probably better than you think you are, right?
Yeah.
And if you're worse than you think you are, don't worry, the internet will tell you.
We talked about this a lot on the podcast before, but like logistics of getting there if you're not driving, should we get into that a little bit?
Well, let's assume a couple of things. Mm-hmm. Let's assume a small, medium, large scenario.
Okay.
So if you are just going for a first-time show, you're not sure about it, let's call that the small setup.
Yep.
Right? You've been doing a couple of shows locally, and now you're getting ready to go to your first out-of-city, out-of-state, out-of-country show. So that's a medium. And then the large is like what we're doing. You've gone to the show regularly enough that you're going to ship a pallet worth of stuff there.
Yeah.
Right? So if you're just starting out, what do you suggest is the best thing to have on your list?
If it's a small show, usually when I think small, usually local. So you're probably looking at two suitcases and a big backpack, right? Whatever you can fit in two big rolly suitcases is probably going to do you for the show. In that backpack, you should definitely have stuff to drink, stuff to eat, snacks. That should, yeah.
You can have your POS on your phone. Yeah. You don't need any fancy setup for that.
However, you and I kind of adopted a different strategy. Our local stuff, we always go above and beyond. Because we have like a decade's worth of portfolio and inventory and all this stuff, even if it's a one-day show.
Important to point out that this is our full-time job.
This is our full-time job.
So we treat it like a full-time job. This is not a weekend adventure in our self-expression that some people are doing at the shows. Just as valid, but they don't have all week to prep.
Right.
Right? They have all week to work their regular difficult job, be a parent, be a caregiver, and then also set up for a show. So let's separate. Like, the reason we bring all that stuff is because we're here all day, every day,
yeah,
doing stuff.
Actually, that's another reason why the convention checklist is really good. Prepping for a convention like a week or two, a month before is amazing. You can get everything ready to go. It's packed away in your suitcases. It's ready to roll. But when the convention starts getting close, you're going to forget if you remembered to pack this, that, and the other.
Right.
So I have like three shows all around the same time right now. I have no idea what's where, but I can check the convention checklist and say, oh, I do have portfolios ready for that show. I don't have bags yet. I do have pens. I don't have this, right? Mm-hmm. So it's good to have that checklist. And as early as you can prep for that show, prep for that show. There's nothing better than having the Calgary show is in like 3 weeks, 2 weeks, two yeah. and a half weeks. 99% of my packing is done. So now all I have to do is work on last minute pieces.
Yeah.
He's here. The Invisible Man.
So if you're just starting out and you're in that small scale,
yeah.
Two bags, a backpack, assume, also make this assumption, I think, dear listener, no one is coming to help you.
Yes.
Just assume that you got to do everything yourself. Pack what you can handle physically, because it's up to you and something will go wrong and you're going to have to carry it.
It's a physically demanding job, what we do.
It can be.
Especially those suitcases are probably not going to be light. They're going to be over 50 pounds each.
Yeah.
One of the wheels is going to explode.
Yeah. The wheel is for sure blowing off at some point when you least need it. There's going to be carpet when you didn't expect it.
Yep.
There's going to be suddenly stairs. There's going to be, and you're just going to assume that no one is there to help you. The reason I think it's important to assume no one will help you is because, to be fair, there are a lot of people who can help and will help. And then it feels like a treasure when it occurs, right? When someone actually helps you with that blown out bag, it's nice, but don't expect it. Because if you're looking for help at a show, in a busy show setup, you're not going to find it, I don't think. Now you're going to a medium show. You can't bring the same stuff. You're getting on an airplane.
Airplane now, okay.
Right? Now your bags are limited weight.
Yep.
So maybe two bags is now three.
Yeah.
And that's now expensive.
Yeah.
And you also can't put your electronics in those suitcases the same way. And if you're crossing an international border, you can't just bring stock for sale. There's a whole logistic piece there. That's a time when... And I've had this experience where it's better to be a guest of a show if you're traveling internationally for the first couple of times than it is to try to go there and make money. Because then you can find out what the tax implications are of traveling and earning money and that things. You can figure out. If you've been invited by a publisher to be a guest of a show, you're not there as a quote-unquote employee and there's no problem with you crossing the border with some examples of your work. But as soon as a Border Patrol guy says, wait, you're coming into my country to earn money and then leave with it, you There's a whole, you know, there are many business podcasts that tell you all the ways to do that.
Yeah, that's a whole other podcast.
So you want to avoid that by just being a person who's going to be wined and dined and sit in your hotel.
So here's what I recommend for you're going into the States for the first time. As tempting it is to get a B&B by the convention center, get a hotel because you can ship things to the hotel without a problem. So, for example, if I'm going to Chicago, I'm going to ship my books ahead and my prints ahead and my bags ahead. And so when I'm going through customs and through the border, I just have a backpack with my clothes in it. Yeah. All my convention stuff is waiting for me at the hotel. The other thing that Gregory and I do is we'll print our inventory at the city that we're going to. Your first thought is, oh God, they're not going to print it the way I like it. Here's the thing.
Sometimes.
Nobody's going to notice, except for you, that the colors are a bit different or your stock isn't quite the same. So I highly recommend, if you're getting into this full-time, printing in other cities, getting the stock. The printer will happily courier the stock from the print shop to the hotel as well. So when you arrive at the hotel, there's 8 boxes waiting for you. Boom.
Yeah, there's another layer of that when you're doing your... you know, every state has different rules related to it, and every time you cross the border, there's different rules, it seems. But paying for all the goods and services in the state you're arriving is a good move.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So that you haven't brought stuff from out of state, earned money on it, and then left that state with it. It's much better for the setup to have invoices related to the place you went.
That's
for international travel anyway, I find. So we're embarking on the palette adventure.
This is the big one. Calgary is like probably top 5 conventions in North America.
Yeah. And we've been doing it a long enough time that there are people who are going to show up for us that we can rely on. Thank you, people. If any of those people are listening to this show, hey, we couldn't do it without you. Literally, we couldn't do it without you. And I packed a lot of heavy boxes, so don't fail me. Be there.
So yeah, I think we both recommend with a big show is bring more than you think you need. Bring more than you think possible. There's something about having more books than you could possibly sell in a weekend that says to a consumer, like, there's something special going on here when you see that mountain of books, when you see tons of canvases, when you see all that artwork. Always expect those big shows to be above and beyond, because like
you're more interested in someone if you're on the floor of any art show, convention, book market, book fair. You're more interested in someone who seems to have bet on themselves than you are a tiny little setup. It's just human nature. You're attracted to the spectacle, so bring it all. Someone asked me in the elevator, just so you know, you're at Chasing Artwork. Yeah, is that the guy who goes boxing with the left hook? This is literally happened. Yeah, this was like a couple of days ago. I was going up to Chasing Artwork. That's why I brought up Lefty. I wondered if you had rocked somebody at the gym recently with a left hook.
Well, I mean daily, but yeah. I can't keep track.
Well, I can't keep track either. They were tall,
profound,
dark-haired.
Oh,
they were tall, dark-haired, fairly muscular. Not the kind of person I would think would be nervous of a left hook.
Well,
so you made an impression.
Good,
perhaps on their skull.
Something profound. I have never regretted going all out at a show and bringing way too much stuff. Sometimes the show's attendance is down, you get hit with a blizzard halfway through the weekend,
the blizzard.
And the Saturday is really disappointing. But I have never been angry at myself for bringing more stuff than I thought I could sell. I have been very disappointed in myself when I assume it's going to be a mediocre show, and so I pack for a mediocre show. And then it turns out Todd McFarlane showing up, and the attendance doubles what it was last year. That's definitely happened to me. So always, always over-prepare.
Yeah. Under-promise, over-deliver. It's a good way to think about how to do your shows. If you have some thoughts related to prepping for conventions that we have not covered, and you're a longtime listener, please feel free to reach out either through my Instagram, where I usually get messages about this show for some reason, or you can also leave voice memos apparently now. I don't know really how those work, but if you want to leave one, with some insights about doing shows that we have not covered. We would love to hear about that. If you're not sure if you're ready, take it from us that you are. Just give it a shot.
Yeah. Jump in. Yeah. Local, keep your costs small, but jump in. Get in that artist alley. You're going to figure out what you're doing wrong immediately, and you'll have everything figured out for next year.
So, this has been Super Pulp Science, where we talk about how genre gets made. This is GMB Kamichuk encouraging you all to join the fight and make comics.